Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For more than six decades, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, has been at the forefront of important research in infectious and immune-mediated diseases, microbiology, immunology, and related disciplines. It conducts and supports basic and applied research to better understand, diagnose, prevent, and treat infectious diseases such as HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, as well as immune-mediated disorders such as lupus and type 1 diabetes. This work has led to new vaccines, therapeutics, diagnostics, and other technologies that have improved health and saved millions of lives in the United States and around the world. What are the strategic priorities of NIAID? How is NIAID accelerating the findings from basic research into healthcare practice? What has been learned from emerging and re-emerging infectious diseases? And what's on the horizon for NIAID? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Fauci, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you.
Good to be here with you.
Dr. Fauci, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can provide us with a brief overview of the history and mission of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. When was it created and how has its mission evolved to date?
Well, it was officially created in 1948. However, its origins really go back to the beginning of NIH because back in the late 1800s, during the period of time when there was a lot of immigration from particularly from Europe, the United States Public Health Service had a station on Staten Island that actually would be examining people who would come over on ships to Ellis Island in New York Harbor. And they were mostly screening and surveillance for people who might have tuberculosis or smallpox or things like that. And then it grew under the radar screen, as it were, for a while until it finally moved to Washington, D.C. And that particular hygienic laboratory from Staten Island was really the first national institutes of health, not necessarily solely devoted to infectious diseases, but it was the beginning of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Joseph Kinyoon was the person who started that. In fact, when you go to the NIH building and you see the history with all the portraits there, Joseph Kinyoon's portrait is very prominent among them. But for the official development and establishment of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that was in 1948. And it's interesting how, given the role of infectious diseases in health in general, and particularly the emerging importance of global health, the Institute has gone, when I became director in 1984, which was about the sixth or seventh largest institute, with a an appropriations of about $320 million over the years, three decades almost, it has grown to be the second largest institute just immediately behind the National Cancer Institute with a budget of about $4.5 billion. So you can see how the growth of the institute and how it's evolved because of things like emerging infections, the HIV/AIDS pandemic, the threat of influenza pandemics, emerging diseases like SARS, West Nile virus, tuberculosis, and malaria. So we've really skyrocketed from a rather small institute among the many NIH institutes to now the second largest institute.
And how are you organized? In other words, you have the $4.8 billion budget. How do you allot that in your organization?
Well, if you look at what we do, we mostly fund researchers who are in universities and research medical centers throughout the country and to some extent the world. So about 10% of our $4.5 billion goes to intramural federal scientists, most of whom are located in our Bethesda campus, but we also have others who are in Hamilton, Montana, in our Rocky Mountain labs, a small contingent there. The rest of it, the 80 to 90%, goes out in grants and contracts to investigators in most of the major institutions throughout the country. Now, within that, it's subdivided into multiple different disciplines. If you look at the major disciplines, our name tells what it is, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. The infectious disease part is everything from HIV/AIDS through emerging and re-emerging infections, established infectious diseases, childhood diseases. We're responsible for vaccines, development of drugs, understanding the diseases. The allergy immunology part is immune-mediated diseases, autoimmune diseases, asthmas, allergy, and things like that. And the reason they were put together, because in history, the immune system was understood in light of it being the body's defenses against infections. And that's how you link the immune system with infectious diseases. And that's why it wound up in the same institute. As years went by, we began to realize that not only does the immune system form a first line of defense against infectious diseases, there can also be diseases of the immune system, like hypersensitivity, allergy, autoimmune diseases, things like that.
Great. And I just was wondering if you could help us, since you described sort of the research portfolio a little bit, could you tell us what basic applied and clinical research really is, and how does it relate to your mission?
Well, basic, applied, and clinical are arbitrary type of designations, but they do have some distinctions. When you talk about basic research, you're asking a fundamental question about a mechanism that may or may not be related to a particular goal for a drug or a vaccine or a diagnostic. Understanding how the immune system works, understanding the biology of different types of microbes. That's fundamental basic research. When you go into applied clinical, now clinical research is a form of applied research. So it's essentially the basic concept development. And then once you get beyond that, then you say, how am I going to apply this? And if it has to do with a human subject, you're going to be doing clinical research. So take an example. You understand the mechanism of how a cell acts aberrantly. Then you say, how am I going to apply that to an autoimmune disease, and can I intervene with a certain drug? Or you look at the basic viral biology of a virus and you understand its genomic makeup, and then you look at, is there a part of that genomic makeup that could be susceptible to a drug? So can I design a drug to interfere with that? In fact, that's how we got the large list of drugs that we now have for HIV/AIDS, where we have essentially transformed the lives of HIV-infected individual with drugs that really work. It was studying the HIV virus, looking at its replication cycle. So that goes under the category of basic research. Once you establish that the enzyme reverse transcriptase or protease or integrase or enzymes that the virus needs to replicate itself, then when you start designing a drug to block that particular component of the replication cycle, then that becomes applied research. Once you then take that drug and put it in a human in a phase one trial first to see if it's safe and then to see if it's effective, then it becomes clinical research. So there's that spectrum that goes from the fundamental basic concept defined as basic research up through and including applied and clinical research.
Very clear, wonderful way of describing it. So what about your role and responsibility leading the institute? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, as the director of a large institute that has a substantial budget, as I mentioned, $4.5 billion and close to 2,000 employees, when you are the leader of an institution like that, you have to provide vision and leadership. And by leadership, I mean lead by example. Establish the vision. Pick the right people. Don't micromanage. Articulate your vision very clearly so that people understand where you're going and what the mission of the institute is. And then as a leader of a large institute, you've got to be consistent in how you deal with people and how you deal with issues. And the reason I say that is that there will always be, maybe every day, someone or some group that you're going to disappoint because people have different viewpoints about how you should approach a particular problem. If you guide yourself with a high degree of integrity and with the highest ethical principles and you're consistent, so people can predict how you would respond to something when you have to make tough decisions that disappoint people. They may not like it, but at least they'll respect you and respect the institution. So it's vision, leadership, consistency, and making sure that you strive for excellence. Those are the principles that I use when I think of how I lead the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
I was wondering, given your time leading the organization, what are some of your, maybe recently, your top three challenges you've faced, and how have you sought to address them?
Well, challenges. There are scientific challenges, and there are management and logistic challenges. So one of the major challenges that one has is that we are dealing right now, the reality, in an era of constrained resources where simultaneously it's an unprecedented era of scientific opportunities. So the challenge is, in an arena of constrained resources, how do you get the best bang out of the buck? How do you push those extraordinarily groundbreaking areas of research that ultimately will benefit public health at the same time as you realize that you have constrained resources? And that requires prioritization. Prioritization because there are a lot of good ideas. You can't pursue all of them. So to me, that's really one of the important challenges. The other is the particular challenge that is somewhat unique for my institute in that it's the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, so that most every other institute at the NIH, including ourselves, is responsible for the basic and clinical research in the particular area for which we're responsible. If it's the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, it's Heart, Lung, and Blood. If it's the kidney, diabetes, it's kidney. For us, it's infectious diseases and immunology. The issue with us is that in addition to that predictable translation from a basic concept to an applied clinical concept, we have to be ready at a moment's notice for a completely unexpected, brand new emerging infection where you go to bed at night and everything is fine. You wake up in the morning and you read in the Washington Post or the New York Times that there's an outbreak of an unknown disease somewhere, and now it's your responsibility to understand what it is, to discover it, to develop drugs for it, diagnostics, and vaccines. This is exactly what we were faced with in the summer of 1981 when we read in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report that there were first five cases of pneumocystis pneumonia in gay men from Los Angeles, and then 1 month later, an additional 26 young gay men from New York, San Francisco, and LA who had this strange disease. Immediately, it was our task to figure out what is that, when you identify it, what you can do about it. So that's a kind of responsibility and challenge that is a bit different from an institute in which they have serious diseases, but they're generally predictable. It isn't every week or month that a new cancer is discovered or a new form of heart disease, where at any given time there'd be a brand new infectious disease.
So in a sense, has this, your tenure since 1984, what has been the biggest surprise in your tenure?
It's a surprise that now, after so many surprises, it's not surprising anymore. And that is the extraordinary—
That's the constant state.
Exactly. It's a constant state of surprise. And that is the extraordinary capability of microbes, virus, bacteria, parasites, to evolve, emerge newly, or reemerge in a different setting and under different circumstances. So if you look at that, for example, there's a truly newly emerging infection, 1981 HIV/AIDS. There may have been a little blip here and there in the previous few decades, but the world never was confronted with what we have now with HIV/AIDS. So that's a truly new emerging infection. We also have what's called re-emerging infections, infections that have been there historically for a very long time, but they re-emerge either in a different form or a different location. Let me give you one for a different form. Drug-resistant malaria. We went for years being able to easily treat malaria, and then drug resistance comes along. Multiple and extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis. Even some of our hospital-acquired Staphylococcus enterococcus that are now drug-resistant. Then there's one that has been around a long time, but not in our backyard. A classic example of that is West Nile virus, which was in the Middle East and in Africa for centuries, and only within the last couple of decades has come to the United States. That's a re-emerging infectious disease. And there are a number of other examples of that, and that's that kind of not a surprise, but the unexpected.
What are the strategic priorities of NIAID? We will ask Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.